stop to it, she said. She wanted to step back from him, but that would end it, too. One false move, one sign of giving, and he would be on her. He was unbuckling his belt. I'm going to strap you, Charity, he said regretfully. I'll put a stop to it any way I can. I'll go up to the school and report him truant, go to Sheriff Bannerman and report him kidnapped. But most of all, I'll see to it that Brett doesn't want to go. He pulled his belt from the loops of his pants and held it with the buckle end penduluming back and forth by the floor. The only way you'll get him up there with the rest of those drunks and animals before he's 15 is if I let him go, she said. You sling your belt on me if you want, Joe Camber. Nothing is going to change that. Is that so? I'm standing here and telling you it is. But suddenly he didn't seem to be in the room with her anymore. His eyes had gone far away, musing. She had seen him do this other times. Something had just crossed his mind, a new fact to be laboriously added into the equation. She prayed that whatever it was would be on her side of the equal sign. She had never gone so much against him before, and she was scared. Camber suddenly smiled. Regular little spitfire, ain't you? She said nothing. He began to slip his belt back into the loops of his pants again. He was still smiling, his eyes still far away. You suppose you can screw like one of those spitfires, like one of those little Mexican spitfires? She still said nothing, wary. If I say you and him can go, what about then? You suppose we could shoot for the moon? What do you mean? It means okay, he said, you and him. He crossed the room in his quick, agile way, and it made her cold to think of how quick he could have crossed it a minute before, how quick he could have had his belt on her. And who would there have been to stop him? What a man did with or to his wife, that was their own affair. She could have done nothing, said nothing, because of Brett, because of her pride. He put his hand on her shoulder. He dropped it to one of her breasts. He squeezed it. Come on, he said. I'm horny. Brett, he won't be in until 9. Come on, told you. You can go. You can at least say thanks, can't you? A kind of cosmic absurdity rose to her lips and had passed through them before she could stop it. Take off your hat. He sailed it heedlessly across the kitchen. He was smiling. His teeth were quite yellow. The two top ones in front were dentures. If we had the money now, we could screw on a bed full of greenbacks, he said. I saw that in a movie once. He took her upstairs, and she kept expecting him to turn vicious, but he didn't. His lovemaking was as it usually was, quick and hard, but he was not vicious. He did not hurt her intentionally, and tonight, for perhaps the 10th or 11th time since they had been married, she had a climax. She let herself go to him, eyes closed, feeling the shelf of his chin dig into the top of her head. She stifled the cry that rose to her lips. It would have made him suspicious if she had cried out. She was not sure he really knew that what always happened at the end for men sometimes happened for women, too. Not long after, and still an hour before Brett came home from the Bergerons, he left her, not telling her where he was going. She surmised it was down to Gary Pervier's, where the drinking would start. She lay in bed and wondered if what she had done and what she had promised could ever be worth it. Tears tried to come, and she drove them back. She lay hot-eyed and straight in bed. And just before Brett came in, his arrival announced by Cujo's barks and the slam of the back door screen, the moon rose in all its silvery, detached glory. Moon doesn't care, Charity thought. But the thought brought her no comfort. What is it? Donna asked. Her voice was dull, almost defeated. The two of them were sitting in the living room. Vic had not gotten home until nearly Tad's bedtime, and that was now half an hour past. He was sleeping in his room upstairs, the monster words tacked up by his bed, the closet door firmly shut. Vic got up and crossed to the window, which now looked out only on darkness. She knows, he thought glumly. Not the fine-tuning, maybe, but she's getting a pretty clear picture. All the way home, he had tried to decide if he should confront her with it, lance the boil, try living with the laudable pus, or if he should just deep-six it. After leaving Deering Oaks, he had torn the letter up, and on his way home up 302, he had fed the scraps out the window. Litterbug Trenton, he thought. And now the choice had been taken out of his hands. He could see her pale reflection in the dark glass, her face a white circle in yellow lamplight. He turned toward her, having absolutely no idea what he was going to say. He knows, Donna was thinking. It was not a new thought, not by now, because the last 3 hours had been the longest three of her whole life. She had heard the knowledge in his voice when he called to say he would be home late. At first there had been panic, the raw, fluttering panic of a bird trapped in a garage. The thought had been in italics, followed by comic book exclamation points. He knows! He knows! He knows! She had gotten Tad his supper in a fog of fear, trying to see what might logically happen next, but she was unable. I'll wash the dishes next, she thought, then dry them, then put them away, then read Tad some stories, then I'll just sail off the edge of the world. Panic had been superseded by guilt. Terror had followed the guilt. Then a kind of fatalistic apathy had settled in as certain emotional circuits quietly shut themselves down. The apathy was even tinged by a certain relief. The secret was out. She wondered if Steve had done it, or if Vic had guessed on his own. She rather thought it had been Steve, but it didn't really matter. There was also relief that Tad was in bed, safely asleep. But she wondered what sort of morning he would wake up to. And that thought brought her full circle to her original panicky fear again. She felt sick, lost. He turned toward her from the window and said, I got a letter today. An unsigned letter. He couldn't finish. He crossed the room again, restlessly. And she found herself thinking what a handsome man he was, and that it was too bad he was going gray so early. It looked good on some young men, but on Vic it was just going to make him look prematurely old. And what was she thinking about his hair for? It wasn't his hair she had to worry about, was it? Very softly, still hearing the shake in her voice, she said everything that was salient, spitting it out like some horrible medicine too bitter to swallow. Steve Kemp, the man who refinished your desk in the den. 5 times. Never in our bed, Vic. Never. Vic put out his hand for the pack of Winstons on the end table of the sofa and knocked it onto the floor. He picked it up, got one out, and lit it. His hands were shaking badly. They weren't looking at each other. That's bad, Donna thought. We should be looking at each other. But she couldn't be the one to start. She was scared and ashamed. He was only scared. Why? Does it matter? It matters to me. It means a lot. Unless you want to cut loose. If you do, I guess it doesn't matter. I'm mad as hell, Donna. I'm trying not to let that part get on top, because if we never talk straight again, we have to do it now. Do you want to cut loose? Look at me, Vic. With a great effort, he did. Maybe he was as mad as he said he was, but she could see only a species of miserable fright. Suddenly, like the thud of a boxing glove on her mouth, she saw how close to the edge of everything he was. The agency was tottering, that was bad enough. And now, on top of that, like a grisly dessert following a putrid main course, his marriage was tottering, too. She felt a rush of warmth for him, for this man she had sometimes hated and had for the last 3 hours, at least, feared. A kind of epiphany filled her. Most of all, she hoped he would always think he had been as mad as hell and not the way his face said he felt. I don't want to cut loose, she said. I love you. These last few weeks, I think I've just found that out again. He looked relieved for a moment. He went back to the window, then returned to the couch. He dropped down there and looked at her. Why, then? The epiphany was lost in low-key, exasperated anger. Why? It was a man's question. Its origin lay far down in whatever the concept of masculinity was in an intelligent, late 20th century Western man. I have to know why you did it. As if she were a car with a stuck needle valve that had caused the machine to start hitching and sputtering, or a robot that had gotten its servo tape scrambled so that it was serving meatloaf in the morning and scrambled eggs for dinner. What drove women crazy, she thought suddenly, wasn't really sexism at all, maybe. It was this mad, masculine quest for efficiency. I don't know if I can explain. I'm afraid it will sound stupid and petty and trivial.